You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey everybody, Ed Stetzer here, and we're talking to Eric Geiger again. I introduced him in an earlier episode, so I just want to kind of jump into the conversation. But Eric's been a gift and a friend for many years, and I'm serving now as of July 1, 2023 as the Dean of the Talbot School of Theology. But I'm also, part of the reason I came to California was to serve alongside Eric at Mariners Church as scholar in residence and teaching pastor here. And partly because I like him as a leader, we've been friends, I trust him, but also some of the direction that we've talked, Eric and I have talked a lot about, and I wanted to bring this conversation to you. And that's partly the theological turn in maybe even innovative ministry. Let's call it innovative ministry for a broad term. So Mariners Church is actually wasn't planted in the 80s and 90s when a lot of these churches were. The boomer churches, if you will, that we all were familiar with. We think of the seeker movement, but Mariners did grow up in a lot of that time and blew up in attendance wise and a lot of during those times. And it's maybe perceived sometimes as a church from the seeker movement. But one of the things that, of course, has shifted in our culture is that you could assume a lot of things historically, and even in church planting, our audience is church planters. But when I planted my, I'd say, first, second, third, and fourth churches, I would say in all of those cases, I could kind of assume that people had a general idea what the Bible taught. Even the people we reached who might have been unchurched, we baptized 2/3 of the adult attendees at the church we planted in the 90s. But there was still kind of assumptions they had about Christianity and about religion and about the Bible and even about the gospel. And now we find ourselves in a time when you can't assume much of anything, for that matter. You can't assume a basic understanding of the gospel. You can't assume a basic understanding of what the Bible teaches about 100 different issues and topics. So Eric, one of the things that the first time I think I was at Mariners Church, you asked me to come out and talk to the staff about an issue of theology. And you've had, you've had other people come and do that. I know Matt Chandler and I talked about him. He came out here. You had Tim Keller come talk to the staff, and not just those kinds of people, the Tim Kellers of the world. What are you trying to do, and how are you trying to do it related to maybe a, I don't know the right term, a theological turn in the way we pastor in this time?
That's great. So I want to answer the question from both a theological and then a practical standpoint. So I want our people that I'm responsible before the Lord for to be discipled well, to have a Christocentric view of the world, to be theologically conversant, to understand key doctrines of the Christian life. And that's been important to me. It's increasingly, the more I've grown in my faith, even more important to me as a Christian and as a pastor. So part of it is I just believe this is important to disciple people well, that they should know some of these, they should know all of these really important doctrines, what we would say primary issues, or some would say first level issues of the Christian faith, that we should know these and help our people know these. So that's the theological. And what I mean when I'm separating the two is I believe we should do this even if it never worked, meaning even if people weren't asking for it, meaning even if it wasn't something that people were craving, because it's still right before God. It's still the faithful and right thing to do. Now, on the practical side, I think the reality is when some of the churches that you refer to as boomer churches, that they grew during a season when the culture wasn't offering sage advice on practical ways to live. So a sermon on 5 ways to be a great dad was like, wow, no one's talking about this stuff. Wow, that's amazing. I can go to church and hear a sermon on five ways to be a great dad. Now, if you Google five ways to be a great dad, there'll be, there's hundreds or thousands.
Every listicle has that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's, it's all over the place. So from a practical standpoint, I think, and I'm not knocking the people who did five ways to be a great dad, because perhaps they did that from a missiological standpoint of, hey, that's going to grab someone's attention. I'm going to then bring them in and help them, but I'm ultimately going to point to a Heavenly Father who does all of these things for us, and He's who you need. And so it is possible that someone did a sermon titled Five Ways to Be a Great Dad and brought the people to the text and brought the people to Jesus. But during that season, Five Ways to Be a Great Dad, and I'm not knocking that title, I'm just using this as an illustration, that was sticky in the culture. It's
people
no
are
longer
Googling right now. Who preached five ways to be
who preached it?
I just say, I did. I'm sure at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little older than you. So, I mean, this was an era where I sort of cut my teeth.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad at people in that time. I'm just
right. I'm not either.
Yeah.
I'm super thankful for those who use that and then brought people to you can do five ways to be a great dad and bring people to theology proper, to God is our Father. And Jesus is fatherly towards us, and we are now sons and daughters of a great King. You can start there and get people discipled theologically and walking with Jesus. But from a practical standpoint, that's way less sticky now. It's just people are exhausted from five ways to be a great dad. And not only because they've had a hard time living it out, but because there's so many every journal, every Instagram influencer who's a dad influencer has hit that already. It's just, there's so many places you can go to get that. And so but what the church can offer now in a world that is so confused is a sense of what the world, of why this is both beautiful and broken at the same time, of why is there suffering and joy at the same time, of how does this world make sense, of how should we think about gender and sexuality? Is the scripture true? Is Jesus really the only way? I mean, these are the questions now that people are often asking. So what an amazing time to be, because the first point I said that, hey, we should do this no matter what, is actually connecting with the questions that the culture is asking anyway. So it's both theological and practical.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think there's been, you know, a shift of people who may be a little older than me. I was talking to Craig Rochelle. I did an interview with Craig Rochelle about how his preaching has changed over the years. And, you know, he kind of started talking about, I had to answer more theological, I forget the exact term, but answer more theological questions. People were starting in a different place. They wanted to finish in a different place. And I think that's important. But it seems to me like, there's some intentionalities that, just to talk about what we're doing here at Mariners. So I'm doing the series with the pastors and staff. I think it's just the pastors. Sometimes I get confused with what meeting I'm in. But
thanks for admitting that to me in front of everybody, Ed.
Yeah, sorry, it's just true. It's true. There are a lot of meetings. They're good meetings. They're great. But we have team gatherings. We have whole staff. We have pastor meetings. And again, partly is those would just be meaningless to most church planners. But the point is that with kind of our key theological staff, the pastors, you asked me to do a series on, and I think it was your idea or our idea together in conversation, but you really wanted me to zero in on what are the three areas that are challenging evangelicals in their views of orthodoxy today. So
yes,
we talked about the biblical authority. We've done the biblical authority one. We talked about Christian gospel exclusivity. Jesus is the only way. What does that mean? We looked at the hard passages and we're looking to, the next session will be talking about issues of sexuality. So again, these are not like light topics. And I would say, you know, for staff, people might say, well, we should dig into that for staff. But not only do we that with staff, we did a series in January on called On the Table, where you did a whole message on transgenderism. Not exactly a topic that is conflict or controversy free. Sexuality in general, same sex sexual relationships. I did the one on, you know, where's God? How are we to believe in God when the world is kind of so messed up, when there's brokenness and evil in the world? And we did this whole series. So why? Because I think the way in the past, the strategy in the past would be, is to bring people in with more practical, appealing things. We talked a little bit about that and how the culture shifted, but let's just stay with that. To bring people in with more palatable truths, not untruths, but more palatable truths, and then to take them to deeper truths, might be in a discipleship class or something to that effect. But I mean, the On a Table series certainly is not that. So what's the thinking that goes through this kind of theological turn?
And I think it's completely appropriate to have a strategy, which is, hey, we're going to hit some broad, problems in the world that aren't so controversial, and then take people deeper. So we still do some of that too. The On the Table series was very, the tension was high because of the topics you mentioned. And I don't think we could do 52 weeks of that, right? The tension was so palpable every time I got up. Now, the beauty of the tension is, I think, one of the preaching books I read says tension creates attention, is that it really did do that. I mean, I didn't have to have an opening illustration to grab attention when you're speaking on gender dysphoria, right? Everyone was leaned in right away. But I don't know if you could have 52 weeks in a row of that. So, but the question to answer is, why would you bring that into a weekend as opposed to that being the third level in a discipleship process, and I'm saying it's okay if it's the third level in a discipleship process for lots of the time, but occasionally it's great to bring that into the weekend. And the reason is, quite simply, people are asking those questions. And because they're asking, what a really great way to answer the question, but then bring people to a higher view of the body. In that case, a high view of the body, a high view of God as creator, a high view of the image of God placed on people and what that means. And so we use the gender dysphoria topic to bring people to teaching the image of God, And so it was, in some ways, you could say it's a little similar to five ways to be a great dad. If you brought five ways to be a great dad to help people understand God as a father, and gender dysphoria to help people understand image of God. If you are simultaneously feeling like you're actually helping people, and not simply just doing a sticky topic. Now on that one, Ed, I mean, you've seen it because we're utilizing you to train our staff. I mean, we spent months preparing our teams for that sermon. So that wasn't like on Wednesday we decided to do that message. I mean, that was mapped out a long time in advance. We read Love Thy Body as a staff, the whole staff, everybody. By Nancy Piercy, we read Rebecca McLaughlin, Confronting Christianity. We had seminars. We had a position paper. I mean, we did the work. That's another reason you couldn't do it 52 times a year. We could not do that 52 times a year, but there's a couple of times a year where there's some major cultural sticking point that I believe we can approach with both truth and grace. So, it's different than they'll get a political pundit. We're not doing that. We're not just, screaming at the culture. We're really equipping our people to answer questions with both truth and grace.
Yeah. And one of the phrases that has been sticky, to use a term you've mentioned a few times with me, is that, clarity is kindness.
That's true.
The culture is asking these questions. So to say, here's where we are. And I actually appreciate the fact how people in our church community who would struggle with gender dysphoria, would identify as transgender, actually responded well. I mean, they wouldn't necessarily agree. Not everyone would agree. Some would. Many would. But they saw the pastoral care. They saw the thoughtful preparation. And it wasn't just, hey, here's a 6-minute video on YouTube that basically says you're this or that.
Yeah.
I think that makes a difference. So the theological turn does require, I think, more than maybe prior ways, which were more, more practically driven. And I don't know that means that, I'm the dean of the Talbot School of Theology. I think that means everyone should go back to school, I guess. But I don't think we need to constantly prepare, which is what you did. You spent a long time working on that series. And yeah. I would really encourage people to be careful before jumping into a complex topic, because you want to walk people through it wisely, biblically, and also in pastorally appropriate ways.
I'll say something about that that I think could be helpful to the planners, to the pastors. So during the whole series on the table, and again, we would not try to do this all the time. This is a teaching series that took a lot of pre-work. We had seminars. Ed led some of those seminars on Wednesday nights. We had support groups launching. And I'll use the gender dysphoria as an example. There was follow-up seminars for if you have a child who's wrestling with gender dysphoria, go to this seminar. We'd love to host you. And we were able to pass out a schedule of all of those on the front end. And I shared this. This is what I shared with the church. I know some of you wished I had talked about this earlier, but it took us a lot of work to prepare to be able to shepherd you through this. I'm not simply teaching at you. We want to walk with you if you're struggling. So this sermon is not me throwing a bomb in the room and counting on you to pick up the pieces. Not that we've done this perfectly, but we have prayerfully put together resources for each of these sermons, and we're here for you. We want to shepherd you. On the gender dysphoria message in particular, I'd say there were, another thing I did that I heard from a lot of people that was super helpful. I said, hey, as I start the message, this was after a little bit of an opening. I said, I'm going to ask you to not applaud, because there'll be moments that you'll want to applaud in this message, but your applause could be misinterpreted by people on the same road that you're on it could be hurtful. It could be misinterpreted and hurtful. I want us to approach this conversation with tenderness and compassion the way Jesus approaches us. I felt an exhale in the room when I did that. And I believe that I heard from lots of people like that was, I felt like, okay, I can rest and know that this is not, you know, going to turn into an applause rally that's going to feel demeaning to some people. So, you know, I heard from a lot of people that loved the message as an equipping tool for them that they could now talk. They felt they had terminology. Okay. Heard from many in the transgender community who, and some would type this into the chat in our online services, who said, I don't agree with where he concluded, but this was fair. And I felt respected. Because at the end we said, hey, listen, don't transform your body to match a changing mind. The scripture would invite you to allow God to transform your mind to match the body that he gave you. So that was the conclusion, said with a lot of grace. And then I had other people in the church who said, I don't agree, you know, who attend occasionally at our church. I don't agree with where you landed, but you were honest and transparent. Like you didn't try to hide. So what that told me is there's some who are like, is the church high? Do we actually think these things and we just don't say it? And so to be transparent, actually, check this out. Assume that people think you're a bigot. Assume that people think you hate anything that is being yelled at in the world. If you have that mindset, then you want to say the truth, but you also want to show the truth in a beautiful and gracious way.
Yeah. So last thought in general, because we talked some about, addressing some of those issues and the preparation you walk through to do that. And and there's actually people can see like there are lists of books and resources that were cited, but that was, you know, that's perhaps one of the great questions that people have today. But in general, what advice would you give to church planters who, you know, their audience will hopefully be more people who don't know the Lord, who are maybe unchurched, whatever term you want to use. Because, you know, I guess sometimes people can go to a pretty big swing and say, well, you know, now I'm not going to try to be anything to connect with people. I'm just going to get up, I'm going to start my church, and I'm going to start preaching through Leviticus, and, you know, and boom. So what advice would you give to church planters who are going out there, want to reach unchurched people, want to engage the lost, and yet know that we need to have more of a theological turn in ministry?
There's unchurched people in my neighborhood who actually wanted a message on gender. and I was surprised. I was a bit surprised. I knew I was going to be equipping believers. I was surprised that there were unbelievers. There's a guy who just got baptized a couple weeks ago, who his first time ever to our church was for the gender message. That's not what I would have thought, but he's seen articles all over the place. He's having conversations with parents and neighbors, and I want to know more about this, you know? And so I was surprised by that. So I guess you're hearing me say, you might find it surprising on some of the topics that you used to have viewed as that needs to be in the discipleship class, that some people might actually want that in the weekend teaching.
Eric Geiger, thanks for being on the New Churches podcast. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.